What's up, everybody, and welcome back to another episode of Big Facts No Cap, the only podcast that's number one with people having emergencies and people involved in insurgencies. I'm Adrian, as always, here with Paul. Let's get big factin'. Let's get no capping.
Big facts.
No.
Cap.
Big facts.
No.
Cap.
No cap.
Big facts.
No.
Cap.
Big facts.
No.
Cap.
No cap.
Big facts.
No.
Cap.
No.
Cap.
No cap.
Big facts.
No.
Cap.
No cap.
The media, once again, the lying news media, have been scaring us all into this is a storm of the century and we're all gonna die. The storm hit last night and it's been fine. I mean, I guess that's good news. I did spend a lot of time prepping for the storm, though. I put a lot of energy into being like, the heat's gonna go out because electricity's gonna go out and I'm gonna die. I'm scared, man. I gotta get canned food and I gotta get alternate sources of heating, but I don't really want to buy an alternate source of heating because I live in a fucking apartment. I didn't, but I don't know. I was like in my mind oddly anxious about it. This is why a southerner can't move up north.
You didn't have enough canned sardines for 1 week?
We would have been fine on food. I don't know.
Well, the Isabel can't eat tuna, right? Out.
Isabel's no longer a vegetarian. I'm announcing what? This live on pod.
Yeah. Whoa!
She said, fuck those animals.
That's crazy. She's like actively putting lipstick on rabbits now? What is she doing?
Yeah. Fuck those cows and their mamas. I mean them all.
Yeah. She's like, hey, I want to try this new lipstick, but I want to put it on an animal first just to make sure. If it makes this rabbit sexy, it'll make me sexy.
When they say animal testing for makeup, it's they're testing that it looks good on a rabbit.
Yeah. Like, they'll be like, yeah, if this blush makes a rabbit look good, it can make me look good. I'm about as sexy as a rabbit.
That turtle's eyelashes are on fleek.
Is that what she's doing now? That's crazy work. It is always funny because, like, it is one of those things where...
That's why they say it's a cat eye look, because they do it on cats.
Exactly. Okay. I think so many reasonable people have the opinion of, like, I think vegans are right. I'm just not willing to do the work. It is funny when someone's like, oh, I'm not vegan anymore. I just couldn't do it. And it's like, all right, so you're just like the rest of us, aren't you, huh?
You know what? I think, like, 4 years is a good stint.
That was it? I don't know why. I thought she was, like, a lifelong vegetarian.
No, yeah, just, literally, I think the months I started dating her, she was starting to be a vegetarian.
Oh, that makes sense. Okay.
Yeah.
Like, no more meat for me.
Yeah, I said it's me or the meats, baby. Choose.
Interesting. Okay. Because, yeah, I know a few people, I guess, yeah, Phil and I both know a few people who, like, weirdly enough, when they were, like, 11, they were like, I decided to be vegetarian, and I've been vegetarian since.
Yeah. I think we even had an advice call like that where it's the parent being like, how much effort do I have to put into cooking
them? Yeah, into making new meals.
Yeah. Usually when it's that age, it's a lot of, like, the Disney animals are cute, and I don't want to eat them. The talking animals in the animated movies.
No cap.
I don't know if there's a way to tangentially get to this story, but I was at brunch with some friends and we were talking about naming babies. And I made multiple jokes about Pierce's taste in naming babies. But one of the things I was like, you didn't want to name the baby Mario or Zelda or something like that. And Nicole was like, that is something he's brought up before. And he was like, Robin Williams named his child Zelda. It's a perfectly fine name. And I was like, I'm pretty sure that's why he killed himself. And then out of nowhere, my friend Victor starts doing an impression of Robin Williams saying, I killed myself because I named my kid Zelda. It fucking got me so hard. Yeah, he was like, I named my kid Zelda and I killed myself. it fucking got me. I was like, that's so fucking funny. Oh. Uh-huh. I named my kid Zelda, then I killed myself.
We're both so bad at it. I like this because usually I'm the one who's bad at impressions, but we're both equally
I don't really
bad
know.
At that one.
I didn't consume a lot of Robin Williams. But that did get me. Oh, the reason I was thinking about it is because that's the friend who also does a really good Shakira impression.
Oh.
He says that she sounds like a goat, which I think is what her singing teacher said when she was a kid. I think Shakira has the same thing as Albert Einstein. That fake story, the apocryphal story about Albert Einstein, where she had a singing teacher who said she'll never get anywhere because she sounds like a goddamn goat.
Oh, yeah. Albert Einstein was kicked off of his high school basketball team.
Yeah,
that's
why
he had to pivot to physics.
He didn't have ups. Yeah.
Yeah.
Like every Jewish kid, he wanted to be really good at basketball.
Something about me that you wouldn't know, man, is I'm actually really good at basketball. You wouldn't expect that for a white boy, but I just want to make it clear on my podcast. I can hoop.
Yeah.
Shout out to all the white boys who can hoop.
Yeah, shout out to our white hoopers.
you're definitely not all very weirdly insecure about making sure everybody knows you're good at basketball. While we're shouting people out, something I was thinking about earlier today, we've given him his flowers many times on this podcast, and we came through with some negativity last week about a FoodTuber. So let's come through with some positivity. Internet Shack is a great food YouTuber because I was thinking about it because earlier today I wanted to make some breakfast burritos. And I went to look up like, I just YouTube like breakfast burrito to see what people said. And every recipe that comes up is like somebody making a very specific breakfast burrito. And I was like, no, what I want is the Internet Shack video.
Yeah.
What I want is the Internet Shack video where somebody breaks down like, here are the things you need to know about breakfast burritos. Here's some like sensible substitutions. Here's the things you shouldn't do. No, that's not what anybody else is offering. Everybody else on food YouTube is offering you a very specific recipe. And it's like, well, this is no use to me. Like, I have the ingredients I have in my fridge. I just wanted to know, like, the rules of making a good burrito.
And so, main thing is not to overstuff it. And you got to heat the tortillas so you can wrap them correctly.
I did heat the tortillas. Yeah, they came out pretty good, but I didn't follow any of the recipes online. I just kind of went with my intuition. I mean, it's something you can kind of, like, intuit your way through, but, like,
yeah.
I wanted to know if there's like some good tips, you know. I do have that like griddle top on the stove, so it does make it nice for wrapping a burrito and sealing it.
You don't ever do a cheese skirt. You don't ever do a little freako at the bottom. You go freak mode with a freako.
No, that's exactly what I was trying to avoid with some super specific burrito. Like this is a triple bacon burrito, and this is what you need exactly to make it.
Okay, well, put some goddamn respect on their name. It's the Epic Bacon Burrito, but okay.
Who makes that? Is that the breakfast time epic breakfast meal?
I don't know. I'm just saying words.
What was that YouTube channel that was so big for a long time?
Epic Mealtime? Is that a thing?
Epic Mealtime.
Yeah.
Anything else happened during your week? We can get into Media Roundup. I've been watching movies because it's been snowy.
The only thing I had is the most annoying thing in the world where I feel like an old man who's out of touch with the times. But after the week that we've had politically in this country, I was on this SNL subreddit. And dude, that subreddit's so funny. Like, apparently the young people are really big on the idea that SNL is humanizing Trump and that they're doing an active harm in the world. And that if they satirize Trump in a cold open where they try and make him seem goofy and likable, then they're actively harming the world at this point, and it is unconscionable, and it'll be the worst thing that SNL has ever done to do a regular cold open in this time during our country. And I don't know. I could not read these posts without, like, my eyes rolling harder than they've ever rolled before, where I was like, I don't know. I was just like, you know what? Whatever. I don't know. It's an interesting place to put your energy, but whatever.
Yeah.
Could not find myself caring about that at all.
I agree. It is odd what people end up concentrating on.
But anyways, that's all I've got for Media Roundup.
I know you said you watched No Other Choice last week. What was your opinion on that?
Oh, I loved it. I thought it was great.
I thought it was really fun, yeah. Without giving spoilers away, I do like that it kind of explained that he wasn't always like... It's not like before he was always like a super stable, nice guy. I kind of like that they gave me some backstory that was like, oh, okay. It's not like he just broke completely all at once. There was some backstory to explain like he always had a little bit of a wild tendency to him.
But also like the commentary on like the modern workplace and capitalism at the end of it. And then also the way that his wife was a ride or die. I think both of those really got me where I was like, damn, this movie's really doing something.
The ending was really great. I mean, throughout the whole movie, part of the joke of the movie is like no other choice. Obviously, he has a lot of other choices. And one of those choices is that it is funny that all these people are so dedicated to the industry that they went into right after high school. They're like, we have to work in paper. There's no other choice than getting another job working at a paper factory. And then I also watched Guillermo del Toro's Frankenstein. Like a lot of his movies... It's a little bit that it's style over substance, but there is some substance there. It just, I don't know. The way it's delivered, it's so similar to the way everything's been delivered in his other movies. I guess I appreciate like the auteur aspect, but I don't know. I'd like to see him switch it up. How often can he do the same trick? But I did enjoy it, so I guess it sounds like I'm being more negative about it than I am. It just feels like I want to see him do something that's not immediately clocked as Guillermo del Toro. And then I also watched F1 with Brad Pitt. I'm not sure.
Oh, who because it's nominated that. For the best picture?
Yeah, yeah. And wow, it's like they really made a movie for European teenagers who love FIFA and Red Bull. It was just I was like,
wait, F1 or FIFA?
Oh, I just think it's the same type of person. The same type of like European like 17-year-old who loves FIFA.
It was like
FIFA
an Adidas tracksuit.
We're getting a little more Slavic. I'm thinking of more like British kids, but it was a good movie. It wasn't great, but it was so on point for what it was trying to be. You just had to appreciate it. It was
you
like,
think it's going
to
win?
Oh, no. That'd be a weird one to win. I don't
was
know
it
what
Brad
will
Pitt
win,
wearing, playing Michael Schumacher? Or what, who was he playing a fake character or what was he doing?
I think a fake character because all of it seemed very improbable. There was this thing in this movie where the opening...
Does he say ka-chow at any point?
He does say ka-chow. Every time he passes someone, he's like, ka-chow, blah. No, there's this thing in F1 where the opening scene is Brad Pitt winning Daytona. And then he goes to be an F1 driver and everybody's treating him like an underdog. And I'm like, I think when also right after winning Daytona, he's like in a laundromat doing his clothes. And it's like, look at this down and out loser. I'm like, I think it's a really big deal to win Daytona. And I don't think, I don't know. It just felt like such a weird thing for him to be winning that as like, yeah, NASCAR is for babies. So that would basically be like his intro into getting like... You know, that's like, that wouldn't be that big a deal. It's like you do that to prep for your big race of getting into F1.
I don't know how often people transition, but my understanding from my dad being an international person in America was that NASCAR was baby shit and that F1 was like actual racing that was way faster and way harder to do. And like, it was NASCAR is literally just for dumb Americans who want to drink beer and watch people drive in circles.
I think, yeah, the skill tops out a lot more. In F1, for sure. I mean, it's like a much faster car, right? Your reaction
yeah,
time.
Yeah, right? I don't know. That was like, that was always my understanding of it, is that NASCAR was for stupid Americans.
Yeah, but it's still a big deal. Like, you're still a mega star.
The money's still there, sure. Okay, yeah.
You're not like, you don't do that as like your intro into getting into serious F1 racing. Like that's
you can
top
afford a laundry machine if you do that.
Yeah,
okay.
That's the top of a lot of people's careers. That's like
you
you're
get
still
a Cheerio sponsorship.
You're
yeah.
still a megastar racer.
Okay.
So it just felt weird that the movie kind of pitched it with your dad's energy as like, oh yeah, that'd be kind of like your prep.
We could all do that if we wanted to. Yeah.
That's like you're a scrappy underdog when you win Daytona. Yeah, it was a fun movie. Like I said, if you want that like Red Bull fueled teenage boy energy, if that's ever the vibe, I'd give it a watch.
No cap.
Cool. Are we getting into the theme? Anything else going on?
Yeah. So the theme for today, you thought of it, so I think you should probably introduce it.
Yeah, because of all the stuff going on with the snowstorm, and the first time as a Southerner. Having to deal with something like that, although everybody in the South had to deal with it too, so it's not like it would have been unique to where I am, but it was the first time in my life I felt like I had to prep for a big emergency. And growing up, we always lived inland enough in South Carolina that no hurricane I can remember was like a scary experience for us. You guys had all that flooding once when you were in college, right? Columbia.
Yeah. But Columbia is a hilly city, so it's very weird how inequitably the damage was distributed, where like nothing happened near me, but like there were people a few blocks down who had issues. Yeah.
Did they know that that was going to be bad? Did you feel like you had to prep beforehand, or was it a surprise that the hurricane?
Oh, this is something that you said at the beginning. This is something you said at the beginning where you mentioned like a once in a 100-year storm or something like that. And I remember a professor that I took who was a stats professor who worked with the local national park. Where a big part of his like sticking point that he would mention was that if you look at the data statistically, it wasn't a 1 in 100-year storm. We've had one in the last 25, 50 years or whatever. And he was like, so people need to stop talking about it as if it's like a really rare occurrence. We're probably going to have more of them very soon.
That's so also a climate change thing.
Yeah, he really took umbrage with the idea of calling it like a 1 in 100-year storm or whatever. But yeah, that was the commentary though.
Mm-hmm. And beforehand, did they know? Was there like a media blitz to be like, oh, this storm's going to be a bad one, prep?
I don't remember there being a lot of, like, grocery store aisles that were empty, like, the a la COVID, the, like, toilet paper missing type stuff. I think honestly, maybe this just speaks to where my mind was at the time. The biggest thing was me and Patrick trying to figure out what place would sell us alcohol underage, because we were living together during the, we weren't living together. It was actually, he lived with me for like 4 days straight while we were there, while he was hanging out at my place because it was storming. But it was when I was living alone in Rosewood. But yeah, our main thing was trying to figure out where we could get alcohol.
That is funny. I feel like I remember a lot of places in Colombia not IDing, like liquor stores. There was one off right over from the stadium that I remember didn't ID. I did a lot of prep around the house. It really did feel like because people were upping, like, you know, the dangers of like a power outage because of all the sleet. I was like, well, I need to. Our house leaks heat like nobody's business. Like, you can feel cold air rushing through window cracks. So the insulation was really bad. So I bought like basically what are these like plastic covers that kind of like tape around the whole window and almost turn like a little balloon in front of the window. And it did really help, but those are a fucking pain to put up. And now I'm like, man, electricity didn't go out. What a lot of effort for nothing, but I guess you gotta. And then it was like a lot of shopping for things like, I had no snow gear, right? So it's like I had to get gloves, I had to buy a shovel, I had to buy salt. They were out of salt, so I couldn't salt the driveway. I bought a bunch of $1 for 1 pound table salt and used that for a little bit of the entryway. And then also the city makes you shovel, and I've never lived somewhere where you had to shovel, so I have to shovel the sidewalk on a corner house. That was my first time having to do that suburban dad thing. Oh, I don't think it's very high.
And why didn't Izzy want to do that? Why was that your responsibility?
Oh, I did it the first time. She came out and helped the second time. Mm-hmm. We had to shovel today.
Just want to make sure you guys aren't being super heteronormative.
Yeah. It was really tough. It did take like an hour. There's a lot of sidewalk on this corner house, but it did feel very suburban. Yeah, it felt like the first time in my life I had to do all that sort of BS. So it felt like a new experience.
And what other times have you had to emergency prep in your life?
Like I said, I don't think the hurricanes ever really got close to threatening us. Helena didn't even hit Greenville too bad. It hit Asheville in North Carolina much worse. And that was after I'd already moved away from the South. Yeah, growing up, I don't remember any other states of emergency. I could be forgetting one, but I don't recall there being a big one while we were growing up.
You don't remember what happened historically that time where gas prices were changing so quickly that literally while you were in line to get gas, they were changing the numbers like with the long pull things while we were trying to get gas. I remember that distinctly.
That was an Iraq war thing, right?
I think so. Yeah. I remember being in line for gas with my parents and like literally they're changing out the three for a $4 or whatever. Like, I guess I don't even know if gas got that expensive there, but like, I remember that very vividly of us having to try and go get gas one day because it was an emergency or whatever.
Mm-hmm. But it was like more an emergency in that like gas was really expensive. It wasn't like anything was coming.
Oh, they're coming, all right.
Oh, they were coming.
Other things that were like that.
Saddam Hussein's troops were about to land on our shores. Yeah. We have to attack.
When the power went out, we'd have to use candles. I remember that. We didn't have like a. I think we had a backup generator at my new house. At the house we live in now.
Was a funny part of going to Costco before. So many people were buying generators. I was like, this feels like either you have the type of house where you have what. It feels like a weird last minute purchase to be like, I'm going to buy a generator and get.
Well, you're losing money if you don't. They're on
gasoline. And then the other thing, so it's like people with like crazy amounts of water, and it did crack me up that every cart had like a single whiskey because they sell that in Costco's here, and we gotta drink our way through it.
Oh yeah, I remember that during the flood. I got invited to, there was a curfew, there's a mandated curfew during the floods. I got invited to a friend's house for a game night. Not only did I bring like a blanket and a pillow thinking I was going to sleep there that night, but I also brought a jug of boiled water that was safe to drink. And I brought all of that over and everyone was like, we're not taking that this seriously, brother. We're like, you're going home tonight. You're going to go past the curfew and we're going to drink the water because it's probably fine. And I just remember being like, oh, okay. I look like a freak right now. I thought we were like in crisis mode now. I thought we were in the middle of an unprecedented event.
But I'm going to hang out. We're in a crisis, but I still want to have fun.
I I still want to go out to game night. It'd be fun. Get a cheese plate. Mark and Mark and Brandon always put together a good cheese plate.
Yeah, that's how I felt.
See, that was the thing. Mark was always really big on, like, he was French, and he was like, you have to cut cheese the right way, but also I love the salt and pepper triscuits. The salt and pepper triscuits, I always have them on a cheese plate. They're delicious. The Americans did one thing right.
Isabel was telling me, like, all her coworkers were doing the whole, like, oh, we're from the north. They make everyone sound like it's this bad. It's probably going to be nothing. And I was like, no.
Is that one of those things where, yeah... Like, that's the protocol, is that you have to, otherwise, because people are, the lowest common denominator is a dumbass who won't listen unless you make it seem like an emergency.
Yeah, maybe, I don't, but I guess, like, to me, it just felt like a new thing, so I was like, I've got to figure this out, because I don't want to end up, I don't want them to find my body frozen in my apartment.
Yeah.
What other types of things? Tornadoes are too, like...
You really can't tell
ahead of time, yeah. But I meant, like, if you did live in the middle of the country, it's not like you can prep for them, right? It's like they kind of show up.
Yeah, right? You see the animals are acting weird, and then you're like, oh, Lord. Oh. Other, like, I guess, yeah, COVID was the other one. I mean, I was a part of the contingent of people who were making fun of people who thought they were going to shit themselves 20 times a day when they had COVID.
COVID was one, yeah.
I don't know. I only had to take care of myself, so it wasn't that hard. I could still go to the grocery store, like, every 2 weeks and be basically fine. All right, cool. Well, do you have any doomsday plans, or I think that'll be the last thing before we wrap up and get to a column.
Yeah. How do you feel about rich people who build, like, doomsday bunkers? I mean, I assume not positively, you know, but
we were talking about that today because we started our mutual aid planning meeting for the year with just talking about what mutual aid meant to us. And someone brought up the fact of, like, the image of an apocalyptic movie where someone's on a, like, plantation by themselves hoarding all of their resources. And it's like, no one wants to be that guy. That guy is never happy in the movie. He's always just scared and paranoid. Like, clearly the best way to, like, get through these kind of problems is with community. And, like,
a lot of people want to be that guy. It seems like half the, billionaires.
Well, that's how we're socialized in this country, is to think that we have to independently solve these kind of issues and be prepared.
I don't want to be a... What do you call it? Like,
pedophile?
That's true. I'll co-sign that sentence. I don't want to. if there's a wizard planning to put a dark spell on me to turn me into one, please don't. I don't want to be.
Thinner. Pedophile. But also,
no, one of those people that, I don't know, this feels like an easy shot to take, but, like, isn't it? As soon as society ends and there's no hierarchy based on, like, the US dollar in your stock portfolio, mm-hmm. like, this feels like an obvious point to make, but your top security guard's immediately going to have a coup. Yeah, he's going to be way more actually charismatic and strong than you. And he's just going to get all the other security personnel you have around there and be like, oh, yeah, why are we still working for this guy? Let's take all his shit.
Yeah, fuck that dude.
Yeah. It just feels like you're asking for that very obvious scenario. Maybe they'll make them wear little, like, suicide collars with an explosive on it. It's like, no, you try to do a coup, I blow you all up, but you do get to live nice working for me.
Yeah. I put little nanobots in your bloodstream that will explode if you try and go against me.
Not to give them ideas, but, like, I feel like that's the only way that's going to work out for you if you're Mark Zuckerberg with your Hawaii bunker or whatever.
All right, do you want to get into a column?
Yeah, let's do it.
All right. So my column is from Michael Murray. This is a new one from Hazlitt.com from December 2012, if you remember that time. Let's see. So this is around the time when the Mayan calendar predicted that the world was going to end. So here we go. Dear Dr. Doom, do you see any business opportunities in the post-apocalyptic hellscape we'll be living in after December 21st? So the reason I brought this one in, it's a short and sweet question with a short and sweet answer, but it is a very common stand-up joke that I think we've talked about before, is like the comedian who's like, what am I going to do in the apocalypse? Tell jokes like a coy jester? I don't have any useful skills. Paul, what are you going to do when the apocalypse happens?
I think podcasting will still be a very sought after skill.
People have time to kill. That makes sense. For me, I've talked on multiple occasions about being insulin dependent means I'm basically the first to go. I'm going to let people eat me pretty quickly.
Oh, yeah. We're not going back to pulling insulin out of cow's blood. I don't think that technology is going backwards like that.
Those pigs, but yeah.
Okay, well, sorry. Obviously, you would know the history of insulin better than me.
Yeah. I think that was like, yeah. Because I think that was a thing where someone was talking about what we're going to do in the apocalypse. And she was like, well, Josh is obviously just going to die. He needs insulin. And I was like, I do, too. And she was like, yeah, but you know how to like beekeep and stuff. You have like useful skills. Josh is useless. And I was like, no, I think I wouldn't be able to trade that for enough insulin, to be honest. I think
obviously Adrian's going to die first. He looks so delicious. Who That's do you true. Think we're cooking first?
I'm already golden brown and delicious. I'm already sous-vided. I've been sous-viding my whole life.
I always told you should wear more sunscreen, man. It's been less time tanning.
The other thing I would think about besides maybe beekeeping, maybe trying to be able to keep bees alive and do stuff like that, I could do that. And then, maybe like a Peanuts character who does like the little therapist, couples therapist thing, I could do that. I think I'm good at conflict resolution with people.
But you don't have the carpentry skills to make the little therapist booth.
I buy it from someone else.
Oh.
I suck somebody off so I can get my little carpentry stand up.
You'd be a whore in the apocalypse.
I'm going to have to give out some hole. I'll tell you what. I don't have that many skills, Paul. I don't know what you're doing, but I'm going to have to give out some hole.
Top hole only?
Some hole. Some holes. I'll tell you what.
I'll do ear hole or nostril. I ain't going any further south.
Well, some people are.
What sort of prices are you charging?
In the post-apocalypse? I don't know.
I think I'm doing, like an assault rifle at least.
Well, some bread. I'd have to indiscriminately...
Cans of evaporated milk.
I'd have to indiscriminately give out some hole for whatever price that I'm willing to give for it so I can get some graph paper so I can graph out supply and demand and figure out where they intersect and then figure out where the price is based on that.
Easy.
My
what
supply
we have
of
here
hole.
Is a product with inelastic
with inelastic demand.
Demand.
Hey, that's true. That beehole's inelastic, so it keeps them coming back.
Mm. And now what would stop them from just taking your hole? Because post-apocalyptic world.
Cooperation and Adrian. Reciprocal systems and community. You know, that's part of what humans evolved, you know?
That just sounds like you're becoming somebody's concubine. I protect Adrian with my life.
Ooh.
Because I'm top dog in this
that's not a bad
post-apocalyptic
life.
Community.
Mm. It's not a bad way to live.
As a sex slave to a warlord.
Yeah, what would you do? What are you doing? You still haven't answered the question. What are you doing?
Podcasting. Live podcasting. I'm standing in front of big crowds talking about advice columns.
Okay. Okay. It's not a bad idea.
I don't know. I think I've been very pampered throughout my life. I don't think I'm made for Mad Max. You know what I'm saying?
You never know until it happens, you know? Have you ever met people who have the oddly specific ideas for that kind of thing? Where I think I knew a guy from Trader Joe's who his plan was like, obviously, if the apocalypse happens, everyone's going to try and post up in the grocery store so they have unlimited food. I'm going to go to the pet store. Legally, pet food has to be consumable by humans. Like, it has to be safe to consume by humans. So I'm going to be the only guy in the pet store who can eat all of the pet food that I want, and I'll be there alone, and I'll be fine for a lot longer without the competition.
Okay, maybe it's better to blow your brains out than to spend your life holed up in a pet store eating dog and cat food at a certain point.
You never
come
feel
on,
like cats
man.
Eat better than us do, that they're eating duck pate every night?
You have to have standards.
Yeah, they're eating some foie gras.
I never thought about it like that. You're right. That disgusting wet food is actually probably delicious when you think about
it. Probably pretty good.
You see, I'm going to the RB surplus store because they weapons, MREs. I don't know how many actually useful weapons they have there. It's probably just like stupid hunting
also,
knives.
Just throwing this out there, tell me off the top of your head, where is the nearest army surplus store that you're going to?
You take a left off Wisconsin.
Okay, yeah, off of K Street? Okay. Mm-hmm. All right, interesting. Okay, it seems like you know where they are. Yeah, when I was talking about comedians having jokes about, like, what is a comedian going to do after the apocalypse, there's many examples. The one that I know of is Hampton Yount has one about, like, what, I'm going to get paid to tell dick jokes in the apocalypse? I guess you have to monopolize a resource, right? You'd have to find some kind of way to monopolize a resource that people need.
Mm. Go to the pharmacy first, then you can trade it for the food from the people who went to the grocery store.
There you go. Get everybody's everybody's antidepressants.
Oh, you think of people, that's what they're going to need is their SSRIs?
Yeah, I think so.
What is the shelf life of insulin? Would you actually be fucked, or could you find like a big cache of insulin?
Oh, probably like a year. I think we could probably survive for like a year or two.
Oh, damn, that actually really sucks, yeah.
Do you think you're surviving more than a year or two?
I guess it depends how bad it is.
After I'm gone, do you think you're really going to want to live anymore?
That's true. I'm blowing my brains out. Also, I won't be able to make money without my podcasting partner.
Oh, yeah. You're not going to try out some new people?
I mean, the sad truth of it is most world-ending situations aren't going to be like some crazy Mad Max thing. It's just going to be... Like, I don't think everything ever is going to break at once. It's all just going to slowly get worse, right?
Yeah,
there's probably not going to be like a day that you're like, okay, yesterday was normal society, tomorrow is apocalypse society.
Well, that doesn't really work for the narrative. The narrative is that there's always a day. It's been 28 days later.
Yeah, I don't think we're going zombie mode. I guess COVID when was the Fire Nation close to attacked. That. COVID was a little bit like there was.
Yeah, but even then, there's an agreed upon date, right?
Yeah, but I think there was like at least a 2 month phase, which is much shorter than like the 50 year phase for just like environmental disaster and collapse.
Yeah.
I mean, what's that thing people say online, which is like climate change is going to be a series of you seeing like increasingly dire news stories about hurricanes and storms destroying people's lives until one day you're the person they're filming?
Damn, that's crazy.
Yeah.
Not me, though. All right, you want to hear this answer?
Yeah, let's hear it.
All right. Answer from Michael Murray. Answer. Well, if you're lucky enough to survive, I think you'll see that currency and real estate will be entirely useless in our shattered, ashen future. However, if you stockpile some of the right supplies, you could do very well in bartering with other survivors for blue chip items like nutrition slaves or tin shoes. For instance, broken glass will likely fetch a pretty price on the open market, so you should start hoarding right now. As far as professions go, water witches, suicide deputies, and bear whisperers should prosper, but there will be a glut of prostitutes and zombie lookout specialists. Damn, he's calling me out. So stay away from these fields in the short term.
I mean, he also looked at the supply and demand curve for sex work, and he came to a whole different conclusion than we did.
Yeah, I really thought boy hole was going to be at a premium. Ruh-roh, Raggy.
I think we should find one really important bridge and camp out there and charge people to cross it.
I'm going to go to a waterfall where the things can't hear me, even if they're not the Quiet Place demons or whatever.
Of all the potential apocalyptic scenarios, I think that's the least likely is the Quiet Place. I think we're more likely to have a Cloverfield situation.
Interesting. I forgot what the crux of that one was.
It's kind of like a Godzilla thing, like a monster from under the water shows up.
Well, what am I going to do about that?
How am I supposed to prep for that? Oh, yeah. And the news is probably going to make it seem a lot worse than it is. They're going to be like, they're saying there's a 90% chance of a mega fauna showing up from under the water.
All right. You want to get to your column?
Yeah, let's do it. All right, I think this is the first time we're doing Asking Eric Adrian. This is on cleveland.com. Does seem like it's probably just syndicated there, though. So this is from January of this year. Dear Eric, I am getting older. I have lived in my home more than half my life. I raised my kids, educated myself, and launched my kids while living here as a long divorced person. In the last few years, my body has changed. I now use a walker. My mind works just fine. Many confuse mobility issues with sinking issues. Today, a neighbor's son, visiting for the holidays, just started shoveling my walk without consulting me. I had already made snow removal arrangements with someone else. I asked if I could pay him. He said no. I told him that the person I made arrangements with was counting on the shoveling income. I thanked the neighbor's son for his kindness and he left. I can no longer do yard work or remove snow. Please help me understand why most folks think I am incapable of taking care of my home and yard. I have been unmarried, successful, and independent for a long time. Help me walk this fine line between kindness and intrusion.
And this is doomsday prep?
I thought the theme was emergency prep.
Okay. Well, I'm going to go ahead and say I don't like this guy. This is the most whiny little question I've heard in a long time.
Yeah, it's clearly an ego thing, right? It's somebody's just being nice, my man.
Some people confuse body problems with thinking problems, and they confuse thinking problems with penis problems. My penis works fine.
That's kind of like him adding multiple times that he's been unmarried. Like, what is that detail? Like, it seems like it's a point of pride for him that he made it through life unmarried, but it's almost about as relevant as being like, just so you know, my dick works.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, I don't know. The person who was going to shovel the thing needed the money and was relying on it, then just give them the money. What do you mean?
Also, do they actually need the money, or is it like you're just saying like, oh, like, is it one of those vague, like, that's their income, they need it, or is it like...
You're fucking over people with your actions. Think about your things that you're doing, kid.
Part of why this one intrigued me was because I also shoveled my neighbor's sidewalk because I was kind of in a groove, and it felt nice because I like him. So I shoveled two of my neighbor's sidewalks for them. I felt like I was doing something nice. It would have felt crazy if somebody had come out and berated me.
You're taking food out of their daughter's mouth for the guy who was supposed to be shoveling that. That's interesting. So that's how society works, is that if it snows, we're relying on people to come out and shovel their yards every day or they get fined? That's how that works?
Well, not your yard, but the sidewalk in front of your house. It's a public property.
So then why doesn't the government take care of that?
You know what? This is going to turn me into a libertarian if I'm going to pay taxes and they don't shovel my sidewalk for me. Pick one.
Yeah, exactly. I don't want to get all Joe Jorgensen on this, but like...
I guess maybe it's hard to shovel sidewalks for the government. I don't know.
That just like that screams like even worse than a parking ticket to me of like, I'm going to get fined for this. Fuck you.
Yeah, there is something you can fill out that's like, I'm disabled or incapable of doing it to avoid the fine, but I think you have to...
Now, thinking I can do, but I can't do the snow. My pee-pee works great, but I can't shovel the snow. Is there a form you can file that says that?
It's a checkbox. It's not okay. A whole other form.
That makes sense.
How do you feel about this? Have you ever tried to do an act of kindness and been rebuffed?
I was talking about this recently where my dad just built a deck for somebody and it was really good money because it's like 3 days of work and you get like a boatload of money. My dad always undercharges people. And I remember there was a time where my dad took me and Dora Lee after school one day to move a piano out of a lady's house. And when we finished moving it out of her house, she gave my dad a check for like what seemed like a ludicrous amount of money. And my dad was like, oh, I can't accept that. And she was like, brother, if I paid someone professionally to do what you guys just did, I would be paying them like twice as much, like except the $600 or whatever. And my dad was like, all right, I'll go take my kids to get ice cream or whatever. I don't know what he did with the rest of it. But I remember it was that. And
that makes
also
your dad sound like an angel on earth. Shout out to Papa Perez.
There was the time. No, it frustrates my mom to no end that he doesn't accept enough money for what he does. There was another time where
Shout out to Papa Perez. Know your worth, man. If you don't know your worth, how are you going to?
Exactly. Come on, big
how's
dog.
How's anybody else going to know your worth?
Big dog got to bark. That's the thing about you, dog. Big dog got to bark. Where we returned a guy's dog. We had found his dog and we had somehow found that he was the guy whose dog was missing. And again, we took him to the guy's house and he asks if he can give us like a reward or whatever. And my dad was like, no, it's fine. It's whatever. And he was like, at least let me give you some money to take your kids out for ice cream. So I don't know why. Maybe this is why I'm diabetic, but a big through line through all of these was let me at least get your kids some ice cream.
You know, I never had that in my family as like ice cream was a special treat for, I feel like that
people
was always such a media
us.
Thing
yeah.
Where it's like you, it's always like taking the kids out for ice cream is yeah. The way you show your appreciation.
So what are we doing for this guy and his
take the generosity and like you said, pay the guy. If you like, it's still the same amount of money out of your pocket and the same work got done. Just pay the guy.
You're taking food that worried out of that person's mouth.
But this feels like the type of like old stubborn man who'd be like, well, he didn't do the work, he can't get paid. That's like a part of like some morality code. You don't get anything in life for free.
I mean, what I was gonna say is that he said like people assume I can't take care of myself, and it's like, but you're paying someone else to do it. You can't. Isn't that the thing?
Yeah,
you made the arrangements, like you were responsible, but like you can't. That's kind of the thing, right?
Is that what like all versions like he's never taken like an act of kindness without it being an insult? Like, I don't, you know what I mean? Like,
yeah, someone holds the door open for him.
Do you even necessarily have to assume this is because you're old and not because, like, they were just doing something neighborly?
Yeah, I guess, I don't know.
If they're not your next-door neighbor, it would make it clear they were singling you out. But if it's literally your next-door neighbor, it might have been the same reason I did it, which is, like, you're shoveling, you're in a groove, like, and you look at their yard and you go, oh, that's not that much. I can help them out.
Yeah, maybe. How was that? Did you get a new top-of-the-line snow shovel, or what did you get? Did you get the standard model?
Oh, yeah, all the nice ones were gone. We had to get, like, the one where they print, like, hundreds of them at the grocery store.
You're trying to get the one that was, like, heated, that way, like, melts the ice while you're doing it?
That can't possibly be a thing, is it?
I don't know. Why would I know what snow shovel technology is?
That seems like it would be so obnoxious with, like, this big handle to fit a battery or something.
Yeah.
That feels like it would end up being worse, and that it would inevitably break in the weirdest way. And if it's not internet connected, it stops working, but you can't even use it as a regular shovel.
As a regular shovel.
For some inexplicable reason.
See, that's why I like escalators. Escalators can never be broken. They can just become stairs.
Cool. Do you want to hear the answer?
Yeah, let's do it.
All right, Eric, what are you going to say? Dear help. Many people think of snow removal and yard work as onerous and even dangerous, and therefore ideal ways to spread kindness to neighbors and loved ones. Try not to think of these acts as disempowering. It's unlikely that anyone who clears a path for you thinks that you're incapable of taking care of yourself. Isn't it more likely that they're thinking that having a clear sidewalk or driveway makes life easier and keeps you safer? This would be true for anyone, regardless of their physical ability. I do want to acknowledge that you want to be consulted first, as is your right. Though your neighbor's son didn't do this, I'd suggest that it was an innocent oversight. Snow needs to be cleared, and he may have simply seen an opportunity. However, this doesn't stop you from paying the other person if you'd already budgeted the funds and you know the other person needs the money. You receive some kindness and nothing asked in return, and you can pass it on too.
That's a cucked-ass answer.
One of the things that we didn't talk about is the very America brain thing of, like, feeling like your yard is like your domain and feeling like protective over it, which this kind of got into or hinted at with the consulted first, as is your right. I get it's your property, so in some sense maybe it's your right, but, like,
is it even? Like, I don't know.
In my case, I don't know about this man's case, it is also the city sidewalk in front of the house, so it's not really, but, like, it feels a little bit like, oh, that, you know, don't touch my yard. We had, like, those adults growing up where they would be, like, upset if you played tag and ran through their grass. And it's like, I get that it's your property, but in some sense, come on. It's also, like, the community's, like, as long as they're not taking or destroying anything.
I don't know.
The idea of children running through your yard being, like, offensive to your domain.
My least favorite thing in the world, the sound of children laughing.
I guess in the legal sense, it's your property and you can demand whatever you want, but it feels like, wouldn't a better world be that we thought of the earth as not your property to that extent that you can demand?
What, are you some kind of Native American?
I know. I guess I'm sounding like a hippy-dippy bullshitter here.
Yeah, I know. Americans are deeply poisoned in their brains. I don't know what to tell you. This is that thing that I've said before where it, like, irks me to no end. The fact that, like, when I used to live in Oak Park and I parked across the street from my house, and a lady came out to be like, hey, just so you know, that's my parking spot. You're not allowed to park there or whatever. You need to move your car. And I was like, this is a public street.
Yeah.
Like, you can say that you want this spot for your car because it's in front of your house. But, like, I know that it's not your spot. That's not how this works.
Yeah, exactly. Like, that type
it's
of, like,
insane energy to come at with somebody.
Weird. Like, this is my domain. This is my land. Yeah. I had this conversation with a libertarian once where it was, we were walking by and the sign was right on the fence that was against the sidewalk was like, do not touch, electrified. And I was like, that's really antisocial. Like, first off, children might not be able to read that. And, like, what if somebody just like brushes against it? Like, it's right against the sidewalk. And they were like, that's their property. They can protect how they want. And I was like, Isn't that not just, like, really antisocial behavior? Like, I guess in some sense they're allowed to. Feels really fucked up to me.
Now, did they mention that they just wanted for a gay couple to be able to protect their weed farm with guns?
They did. They said that next.
Okay.
But you don't want to know the third thing they said.
Yeah, that is insanity. That's insanity to try and defend that. I don't know.
It's my land. I'm the feudal lord. Get your peasant hands off of it.
Same house that I was living at where I had that really terrible kerfuffle about getting my car towed, where it's like, if you're gonna have a huge fence around your yard and then also use a big thing of plastic to obfuscate being able to see through it to the point where you can't tell which part of the gate opens up and which part's just a fence, like, maybe people are gonna park in front of your gate then, you fucking idiot. Like, Jesus Christ, that got me so angry that I was like, I literally did not know that's where the gate was because you can't see anything.
I know, if you want that level of isolation, like, go live out in the country. That's where it's appropriate to be like, nobody's, you know, should get close to my house because I own 5 acres around it.
That's what I was, when I was on that walk around my parents' house and I was walking down and I was like, I always wanted to go down and see what's down this trail. And I was like, it is kind of creepy though. I wonder if they have some kind of weird sign up. And then I get up to the end of the trail or whatever. And I'm like, yep, it says turn around now if you know what's good for you, whatever. And I was like, oh, okay.
I know. Putting up a threat on a sign is always so funny. Like, trespassers will be shot. It's like, I hope not. Yeah. That'd be crazy to kill a man because they walked down the wrong road.
Yeah. Anyways, I don't know. Did any of this answer the question?
Yeah, I think we answered it perfectly.
All right.
No, but I think that I was trying to get to like the emotional, like, people feel violated that you would shovel their outside their house. That's their house. I think that might be part of the psychology.
Yeah, because, you know, I like it done a certain way, and so I can't guarantee you're going to do it that way.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I don't know. I think there's a quote that that this guy should learn about, something about from each according to their ability, to each according to their need.
I've never heard that before. Adrian Original?
Yeah, I brought up another Adrian Original during a meeting today of pessimism of the intellect, optimism of the will. That was a real banger.
Who's that?
Great for times like these. That's Gramsci.
All right, Adrian, we're going to round up some luxury bunkers. People have built to survive the coming apocalypse that it seems like everybody in society is convinced is going to happen, right? Left wing. No matter what, things seem like they're getting bad.
It's a tune we can all dance to.
So we're looking at M2 Now's 7 luxury bunkers to survive the apocalypse in. I guess we'll rate these on how much we'd want to live there and how much we think it would actually last in the apocalypse.
All right. Sounds like a plan.
Okay, the first one is Vivos X Point. It's a project developed out of 575 former U.S. Army base all-risk bunkers in the Black Hills of South Dakota. They basically look like little hobbit hills, but with like a concrete front. They're now selling for $45,000 each.
That's not bad.
Centrally placed in the U.S. away from coastlines and 160 kilometers away from the nearest known military targets. Although, I'm going to add here, I'm going to editorialize a little bit. If I was like, you know, Russia or North Korea, or, you know, if I was about to start a nuclear war with the U.S., I would add this to the list of places to nuke just to piss off these losers.
Yeah.
The total area of the base is 46 square kilometers. Each bunker is 400 feet away from its neighbors, meaning no need to worry about hearing any rowdy music.
No need to worry about them shoveling the snow out of your lawn.
All the bunkers featured a standard 26.5-foot interior floor width with lengths of 60 feet and 80 feet, each with 12.5-foot high ceilings to the top of the interior arc. While the pricing is cheap, you'll be dropping a ton of money into outfitting your concrete shell to be habitable. Oh, so $45,000 for the base, and then you have to build out what's inside the bunker.
Oh, that's crazy. An annual rent of... Oh, never mind. That's not that bad.
An annual rent of $1,000, but once a nuclear blast rips across the land, you can start trading in bottle caps instead. Okay, so that'd be a little funny.
I mean, the concept art looks nice, but is that what they actually look like, or?
So that's a show bunker that you would have to pay $120,000 for them to outfit it like that.
That's still not bad. That's actually still not bad.
Adrian's like, this is just that house I'm going to buy. This sounds great.
I mean,
great.
You saw the tiny house I almost went into. This is better than that tiny house.
The floor plans accommodate 4 to 20 people with options including a great room, kitchen, private bedroom, and master suite, full and half bath, gym, laundry, water filtration.
Now we're making things up, right? I know that like housing things is famously where my English fails, but a great room, is that a thing?
What is a great room? Is that like a combination living room?
Is that what it is? Is if you combine a bar and a living room, it becomes a great room?
It's a great room.
It's a great room.
pump room, power room generator, and an exhaust chimney. Oh, you could also get one where you share it with strangers. There's a 16-person shared bunker for, like, individuals. You can do the
hostel version?
Yeah.
That's crazy work. Priced at $15,000 per person?
For those, it comes stocked with 1 year of food and supplies and all the amenities of life. Rent is split 16 ways. This really seems like somebody came up with a scam, right? Like, they just own this land that had these old military bunkers, and they're like, well, nobody's ever going to buy any of these for anything, so, like, let's charge weird doomsday preppers. Let's
make it into a doomsday prepper thing. It is... First of all, the painting is in the concept art is terrible. I don't know why you want a picture of kids playing with sand and then those weird abstract art pieces.
I want to know how they make the ceiling look like a sky, because in this picture it looks too much like a real sky. And it's like, that's not going to look... It's going to look drearier. Oh, you think it's open to the...
Yeah, oh. Right.
How? I mean, then what's the point of being underground? You might as well just build an above-ground house if that's just glass ceiling.
Isn't underground, like, more energy efficient and stuff like that? Like, you don't have to heat and cool as much if you're underground?
I guess, but if you have a, like, I mean, then you could just live somewhere temperate if that was your biggest issue.
But you gotta be in the, I don't know. It's in South Dakota. I don't think I'm gonna buy anything in South Dakota, to be honest.
I mean, I think from looking at this picture, I think that's supposed to be, like, a fake ceiling.
Okay. Yeah, maybe.
How far underground did they say you were?
400? No, that's...
It doesn't say. Maybe you're right. Maybe you are just in an above ground thing. But at that point, it feels like you could buy any piece of, like, land out in North Dakota and build a house on it. I thought the whole point of a bunker was that, like, it provides protection from, like, radiation and bombs.
Well, not with you in charge. You said this would be one of your military targets.
Yeah, this really feels like they were like, there's nothing you can do on this land. It's not good for growing anything. We can't sell it to a rancher. Nobody wants it. Like, we have to find the biggest suckers possible. Like, even after you sell them a tiny patch of land, you're still charging them yearly rent. It feels like a...
Oh, it's split 16 ways.
Oh, if you get the lone wolf one, yeah. But for each bunker, they're getting $1,000 a year. That's a pretty good deal for them. Rent for people aren't living there. Oh, what I want to know is, are you allowed to use it as a vacation home when it's not the apocalypse? Can you go hang out here? Is there anything worth doing?
I have
doing?
To imagine. Oh, no. Well, probably. Those are separate questions.
I could see you could dirt bike around the place or something. I don't know. There has to be some fun outdoor activities.
Okay, yeah, you think the bad boy chiller crew is coming around here?
All right, what's up next?
We got Vivos Indiana, same company. This looks nicer, though. Vivos Second Sight. In the States is Vivos Indiana, an underground complex big enough to accommodate 80 people. As is the case for most of these networks, it was built during the Cold War to withstand a 20 megaton blast, much like Paul's toilet. Good enough to withstand most, but not all, of Russia's cachet of nukes. They have designs for 100 megaton nukes. Vivos Indiana can run for a year minimum, completely cut off from the outside world. Apparently the 1 year minimum thing of insulin is actually not that much of a deal breaker. That might actually be about how much everyone else is prepared for.
With food and stuff, yeah.
Tagged at 4-star hotel level, this is the most homey shelter we've seen so far. Outfitted with natural wood and plush armchairs, there's everything 80 people would need to keep themselves entertained for the end times. A theater area, dining, exercise equipment, kennels, gardens, and even ATVs, bicycles, and a workshop for the bad boy chiller crew. Apparently, there are currently free spaces that can be booked. Current members of the bunker apparently include surgeons, doctors, ex-military, chefs, and unfortunately, bankers as well.
Yeah, this sounds like my hell, to spend the apocalypse with 80 people who are all crazy enough to pre-purchase a spot in a bunker.
What seems weird to me, and I have to imagine that this kind of has to be a wink-wink nudge thing, but, like, there's definitely a sex room, right? Like, what else are people going to be doing in the apocalypse?
At least this one has a garden. The last one, all I could think is, like, if you're just going to starve in there so quick. I mean, even a year's supply of food, it's like, okay. But, I mean, a garden isn't a farm. I don't know how far that's going to go. And it's like, I don't know, is that powered with UV lights? How are you gardening in there?
Who knows? That would be my apocalypse plan, is I'd go find that guy I met in grad school who was studying how to grow plants on Mars.
And offer him your holes?
He's pretty cute.
Next up, we got the Oppidum. It seems the preppers have the Soviets to thank for all aspects of our current impending doom. The Oppidum used to be a secret base built by the Czechoslovakian government and the Soviet Union near Prague. In 1995, it was a simple nuclear shelter, but has since been refurbished to be the largest underground retreat for a single buyer. The surface is a ritzy, opulent living space occupying 30,000 square meters of property, comfortable enough for peacetime. Underground is a sprawling 7,200 square meter underground space. Oppidum is also the name of a company outfitting the shelter and offers their services around the world. Their sales pitch is less aimed at doomsday preppers looking for clues and revelations and more at the uber wealthy. They state that in addition to providing ultimate safety, bunkers add value to your property in terms of safe storage for art, collectible cars, and other valuables. They also provide amenities like a gentleman's lounge in which total privacy can be assured.
That's what I'm talking about.
People.
What? No. Sex dungeons. It does look nice. It does seem like... I don't know how you get started in this business, but it does seem like the kind of thing where a good grifter would be like, oh yeah, I make money selling unnecessary doomsday bunkers to rich people and I make them super luxury.
I think one of these things is too, it's like, I guess they all have private jets and helicopters, but it's like, you really got to have a plan to get to this bunker quick during the, like,
oh, yeah.
You know, you're not catching a commercial flight if everything's going to shit, or you need to know something is coming and have time to get there before the general populace knows.
Yeah, yeah.
It's all, like, very remote. I assume you're not living next to this. It's not like you're nipping over from your house to your bunker.
Another Vivos, Europa 1. Oh, this one's nice, though.
Yeah, this one's definitely outdoors, though.
It doesn't get much better than Europa 1. Vivos 5-star premium luxury accommodation for those who want to ride out the end of the world in style. This 76-acre property is located in Germany and used to serve as a Soviet munitions dump. After they left it, the German government used it for the same purpose until pesky bylaws prohibited massive ammo dumps from being stored next to highways. They flipped it off and landed in the care of Vivos, which is now flipping off levels at $2 million a pop for buyers to outfit their personal specifications. Collectively, it's comprised of 5 kilometers of continuous tunnel and 227,904 square feet of secured blast-proof living area sitting at a stable 12 degrees. It's rated to withstand everything up to close to a nuclear blast. That's the beauty of being deeply embedded in a limestone mountain. It also has everything you need for long-term survival. A water treatment plant, deep water wells, a power plant, air filtration, hospital area, and even the possibility of restaurant areas. The water treatment plant seems like a kind of a unique thing. That's kind of cool.
So it's not above ground. This is another fake window, or is this just the entrance?
It's in a mountain.
Yeah. Okay, so maybe this is just the entrance. So far, every image we've seen looks like a CGI mock-up. Like, I want to know how this actually looks, because this is so clearly fake.
It kind of looks like Begonia.
They do be kind of looking like Begonia. Actually, which part of Begonia?
Vibes.
Like the office she works in?
Kind of, yeah.
Also, in that list of the must-haves, nothing about food. So it's just going to be food that's stored
restaurants.
There. Yeah, but where are the restaurants getting their food? It's not like there's a full functioning farm underground.
They'll
in
never
this mountain.
Tell.
Oh, they have plans for this place to include a seed bank and DNA storage.
I thought that was just going to be my boy hole that was going to be doing DNA storage.
What I'm learning is also, how are there so many companies that do this? We've now run into 3 different luxury bunker companies that outfit like old
I'm
silos.
I'm surprised there's not more.
DBX Doomsday Bunker. Maybe the most qualified architects to design a shelter for long-term living would be well-versed in the art of building for space habitation. That's exactly
hey, see,
what Spanish architectural firm Abibu, led by Spanish architect and designer Alfredo Munoz, has qualifications for. He's one of just a few designers who are recognized as space architects by the AIAA, of which he's a member. The underground bunker was designed in South Carolina. Let's go.
Let's go.
The underground bunker he designed in South Carolina occupies 1,200 square feet and can accommodate up to 2 family groups and a maximum of 10 people. It's both a survival shelter and completely self-sufficient second home. It's comprised of modular vaults surrounding a hydroponic garden and has just a beautiful design. Nobody knows who the client who commissioned it is, but Abibu does share that they are self-confessed prepper who wants to be ready for a potential calamity.
Yeah, what? When he finds out Lindsey Graham is gay?
No, not Lindsey.
not Lady G.
This one does show in the mock-ups, like the hydroponics, and they mentioned it. So this one does have something to grow food.
Oh, wait, I know where that is.
This is the one we're going to storm and take over.
I know that exact hill. I know where that is in South Carolina.
Do you really?
No, of course not.
We just got to get 2 guns of this as ours in the apocalypse. Blah. They gave us a photo of the entrance. We can get one of those GeoGuessr guys to let us know where it is.
Yeah. And they got a Cybertruck and a Tesla. Not impressed.
Well, the one thing that there's going to be plenty of in the apocalypse is an electrical grid to power those. Good thing you don't have a gas car. You need 2 electric cars. Yeah.
And now we've got the Svalbard Global Seed Vault. Unlike the others, the Svalbard Global Seed Vault is not intended for a human survival. Instead, as the name suggests, it's for the survival of plant life. Located on a remote island in Svalbard Archipelago, halfway between mainland Norway and the North Pole, lies the giant fridge, the only marker of its existence being a glitzy concrete shard poking out of the snowy tundra. It's a seed bank. So,
well,
I don't really
but
know
you know,
points.
You know about this one. This is the only seed bank in the world I know about.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
The only seed bank I know is my ass.
In the apocalypse.
Is my ass
the toughest, strongest guy is. Next up, we have the survival condo. The survival condo is a good name for it. The survival that's not me. That's what the article wrote, just to be clear. That sounded like the dorkiest sentence of all time.
That's a good name for it.
The survival condo is built into a decommissioned intercontinental ballistic missile silo back in the 60s. To be more specific,
I thought that my ass was the only intercontinental ballistic missile silo.
Oh, this one brings me to an important point. About your ass. No. Part of a lot
None
of these
have
bunkers,
had a pickleball court.
You know, Jack McBriar has that show where he goes to these doomsday bunkers.
No, I didn't know that.
And one of the things that stuck out to me while I was watching through that was, oh my. They always have an element of it that's like, obviously, you know, the apocalypse is going to be like, you're going to have a lot of time on your hands. So I think part of it is that they always build some sort of like activity into it.
Yeah. You had a pool table, you had a ping pong table.
Yeah, this one has a full climbing wall, but it also feels like a rich person stunting thing. Like, what's the most stupid, unnecessary thing I can put into my bunker? Like, it feels like a dick measuring contest.
Yeah.
And this one has a massive climbing wall in it. But, yeah, otherwise it seems much like the other ones.
And a ping pong table.
Oh, and a big pool. The survival condo's marketing is more blunt than Vivo, stating, "We are not looking for stereotypical survival nuts portrayed in movies, but rather like-minded individuals with a desire to provide care and protection for their family. We seek people with the financial resources, interest, education, experience, and desire to participate in the shared tasks of survival under difficult circumstances. We want people with good values, and we will screen applicants for criminal backgrounds."
I mean, I'm not a marketer, but why isolate your audience like that?
Yeah, this is obviously a scam. I guess that's part of the marketing. It's like for the
regular doomsday preppers.
Yeah, for the guy who thinks he's a little smarter than the dumb doomsday prepper. But no, if you've bought into this, you're
but
also
foolish
a moron.
Enough to be tricked by a wall that looks like a beach. Foolish enough to be tricked by a wall that looks like a mountain
that looks like the saddest thing you've ever seen in like one of those strip mall daycares. That's how I would describe the art style.
I don't know why. The only thing I can think of while looking at these like images is that this would make a really good setting for a Yorgos Lanthimos film.
That liminal space feel.
Oh, is that it? Nice.
That's it. Those are the 7 luxury bunkers to survive the apocalypse in.
The 7 luxury bunkers you can't say on TV.
Anyway, I think we should map all of these out and figure out which one we can storm the easiest.
Nice. Is that your big fact?
That's my big fact.
And my no cap is, you ain't gotta get ready if you stay ready.